Flight 719er. Did you say golf course?
Oh, wait! How about the new parking lot? Can we land there?
Some people want to believe that there are many ways to heaven. Yet the Bible, in talking about Jesus, clearly states there is only one name under heaven given to man by which we must be saved.
719er, you are aware that you're flying a 747 jumbo jet. The only safe place to land is the airport.
I think you should be more open-minded about this. A bunch of us were talking and we were thinking about maybe landing on the interstate. I mean, you know, we'd be a lot closer to hotels and everything. Okay, Tower?
Just like the tower, the Bible is guiding us to the only option we have available. Will you turn to Jesus? A message from Lifeline Productions, 1-800-523-8669, lifelinepro.com.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
And keep American jobs in America.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite to Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a stain?
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here tonight with us on Sweet Liberty. Today is Tuesday. It is the 9th of February in the year 2005. And last night, we were talking about the imminent upcoming reinstitution of the draft and what our young people can do about it. And Wayne is on with us this evening. I'm going to begin first with our spiritual message, and then we'll bring our guest up, who is more versed in the letter of the law than I am. And I'm so glad he's with us tonight. This is from Matthew 18, and we'll start right here at the beginning of chapter 18 in Matthew. At the same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him, and set him in the midst of them. And he said, quote, Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoso shall receive one such little child in my name, receives me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the seas. Who shall offend one of these little ones, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he was drowned in the depths of the sea. And I thought about this earlier this evening, folks. This has been in my mind, actually a presence in my mind, for a long, long, long time. Our young people who are registering for the draft when they, well, today when they go to get their driver's license, age 16, first of all, I would think that would be them being coerced into entering into a contract before they're of contractual age, and maybe Wayne and I can talk about that because that just occurred to me. But what has occurred to me is that they can be taken off to war when they're 18 years old. They still can't vote yet. Not that the vote in this country means anything anymore, but it's the principle of it. They can go off to war, they can kill, they can die in defense of the world order when they're 18 years old. And as I said last night, if you have little 5-year-olds, 9, 10-year-olds, don't think that they're safe. Don't think that they're safe, because that was the age of the little boys when the first Gulf War was undertaken. And I think it's even ridiculous to call it a war, because basically it's been genocide from the get-go. But the young men who are fighting and killing and dying today were about 9, 10 years old at that time. So you hold your loved ones close, hold those little ones close, and you cherish every precious moment you have with them. And you do everything within your power, and with God all things are possible, to protect those little ones. And Wayne Blanchard, thank you so much for being with us tonight, dear.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Well, you know, well, think about that. You know, and it didn't dawn on me until I was saying it. When they go to get their first driver's license, they're 16 years old, and many of the states have passed, quote, laws now connecting. In other words, in those states that have done it, and I suppose that it is different, because we saw a different type of a bill that was introduced here in Pennsylvania last year. There was actually an opt-out little square there, which probably nobody checked anyway, because what it said is that that you have to register for the draft. It's the law. And if you don't want this driver's license application, the signature, in other words, on the application to be considered a registration, then check the box below. Who's going to check it, Wayne?
Right.
Because they say, well, it's the law anyway. But they're underage to enter into a contract, aren't they?
Of course.
So that's one good, there's one I would say, a defense that a person would have. That they were coerced into entering into a contract before they were of contractual age.
Well, plus it was done without their knowledge or consent, which is kind of like a fraudulent act.
Well, see, they're told. I mean, they're literally told that in order to get the driver's license, they have to agree to register for the draft.
Sure.
And even though they are consenting, they're only consenting because, first of all, they're lied to. They're told that they have to. It's the law. Mm-hmm. And secondly, you want a driver's license, you're going to register for the draft. Wouldn't that be coercion?
Sure is.
Threat, duress, and coercion?
Absolutely. And then you have to add to that, too, that on November 4th, 2004, computer matching between the Selective Service System and the Department of Education became reality.
Say that again, Wayne.
Computer matching between the Selective Service System and the Department of Education became reality.
Meaning?
So that any, you know, all students are automatically registered with the Selective Service System.
Well, but they aren't actually registered for the draft, are they?
But they have. I mean, the Selective Service System has access to their database.
Right, exactly.
And they can pick up all the information they want.
Yep. And they can chase those young people down that don't come and register.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Wayne, there are two things, as we talked earlier today again, two items. That maybe you can shed more light on for us tonight. One of them is, who is required? You know, we discussed Title 50, which is not positive law, which doesn't apply to the state, and that's where the Selective Service, what do you call it, the law for registration for the draft is under Title 50.
Mm-hmm.
And it says anybody that's required to register and doesn't. And so I hope that we can discover, according to them, who actually is required. And secondly, because that way they can know in their own heart that they don't have to go register for the draft, and by all means, they should not, no matter what. Even if they have to forego a driver's license, they should not register for the draft. But secondly, for those who have already registered, what do they do if they are called up? And Wayne, I wonder if you would... I was doing dishes before I got on the air,
mm-hmm.
and I'm smelling something. I put a frying pan on to dry it, and I've got to make sure that I shut the flame off under it. So would you give our listeners a little bit of background on yourself, or I just don't want you to talk about anything I might miss me.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I'll be right back.
Okay. Basically, I live in the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia. I've been here for a dozen years or so. Moved here from New Hampshire. I've been involved in the banking business in New Hampshire. I established a commercial bank, and I served as a vice president and director for 4.5 years. And I subsequently resigned because of fraudulent activities at the bank. In any event, my position has been for a long time now that nearly everything that emanates from government is fraudulent. One of the key elements for Selective Service registration is, in my opinion, is goes back to 1933, the bankruptcy of the United States in 1933, and the state of emergency that was declared then, which has never been lifted. And coupled with this was the War Powers and Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917. They combined all this, and on March 9th, 1933, there was a proclamation attached to it's called Proclamation Number 2038.
I'm back and I'm listening, Wayne. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Which stated that there was a permanent state of national emergency. And of course, when there's a national emergency, the constitutional law is suspended. So we've been under official constitutional suspension since 1933.
Okay, I have to ask a question here.
Yes.
Okay, well, you say, and I know that this has been said, that since the Trading with the Enemy Act, we've been under a state of emergency,
mm-hmm.
so our Constitution has been suspended.
Right.
I would say that given that the Trading with the Enemy Act is in Title 50, and even if it wasn't, there is nothing in the Constitution, any place, that allows it to be suspended, not even under an emergency. It doesn't say that that the Constitution is suspended.
Well, see, the federal government is a corporation, so a corporation operates out of the venue of the Constitution, and they can do whatever they wish, and they do.
They might, but it doesn't make it lawful. It might be legal.
No. Okay,
thank you. And I wanted to clarify that because what they say and what is actual are two different things, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Just like when they say you have to register for the draft, it's the law. They're talking to those who are required, and we don't know. Were you able to trace?
Well, I hold the view that those required are... One, people that are federal citizens under the 14th Amendment. In other words, if you don't renounce your 14th Amendment citizenship, you have acquiesced, and you know, you're part of that 14th Amendment, and you're a federal citizen.
So how does one not acquiesce?
Well, you acquiesce by silence. So if you've never state anything differently, that you are not a member of the 14th Amendment Public Trust, then you're soon to be one.
So, but how does one make the statement that they're not?
Well, there's provisions in the Uniform Commercial Code to do that. And the Uniform Commercial Code is, it's actually primarily the law of the federal government, but there are some provisions in there that give us a remedy and recourse so that we don't really have to be attached to them if we choose not to be.
Okay.
But I wanted to go a little further under this Trading with the Enemy Act. On October 6, 1917, under the Trading with the Enemy Act, Section 2, Subdivision C, Chapter 106, states that an enemy is defined, quote, other than citizens of the United States, unquote. Then on March 9, 1933, Chapter 106, Section 5, Subdivision B of Trading with the Enemy Act of October 6, 1917, was amended as follows. Quote, any person within the United States. So what this means, that this is Public Law 94-564, and it states that the people are the enemy of the state.
Public Law what?
94-564.
Okay. And the people, but it says within the United States, but is that in the several states, or would that be people who are under the corporate government, meaning in the federal zone,
well,
and in territories, enclaves, and possessions?
The federal government always uses the United States to mean their corporation.
Okay. So that wouldn't mean us again, would it?
Well, no. But again, if you don't make them aware of that difference, then you've acquiesced. So my contention is, if you're an enemy of the state, why should you go to war for your enemy? You're aiding and abetting the government
that has declared itself the enemy of the people.
Exactly.
Well,
and this is an issue which I think should be flaunted.
You know what's occurring to me right now, I've never done anything. I've never made any statement. I've never issued or published a statement that said, I am not a U.S. citizen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a voter. I'm not registered to vote for that reason, because I'm not going to declare myself a U.S. citizen. But what I hear is that by our silence, we are acquiescing.
Absolutely.
Okay, so maybe there's another broadcast that we can do where you can have that information that we could... Because to say to our listening audience, well, the Uniform Commercial Code has provisions in there,
mm-hmm.
that leaves such a huge gap between what you said and what is possibility for them, because in the first place, there are so many people that they work, and both husband and wife work to keep the bread on the table and to keep the taxes paid,
mm-hmm.
and even to know where to begin to search. So somebody like you who has done the research to be able to literally give them the information where they've got a starting point,
mm-hmm.
I think that would be real important.
Oh, sure.
So maybe, maybe even if you're going to be available tomorrow, we could pick up on that and talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Well, the fact of the matter is, because of this activity here under Public Law 94-564, there's fraud involved there.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay,
And a fraudulent contract is no contract, yes?
Well, that's why I want to read you one other thing, and it's U.S. versus Throckmorton. This is a U.S. Supreme Court decision, 98 at 61, page 65. It says, fraud vitiates the most solemn contracts, documents, and even judgments.
Oh, that's familiar.
Okay. And that that U.S. Supreme Court decision has never been overruled or overturned. So it's as valid as can be, and it should be used by everybody whenever they're dealing with government at any level. Because their implied contracts under fraud really don't amount to anything. They're null and void. But unless you bring it to their attention and demand your rights, again, you've acquiesced, and they'll keep right on plowing over you. That's how they do it.
And would you read that again? Fraud vitiates. What does that mean, vitiates?
Nullifies.
It nullifies. Fraud nullifies
the most solemn contracts, documents, and even judgments. So that covers the gamut pretty much.
So, and even judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, let's say we have people listening whose youngsters have registered for the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine what they must feel like, the anxiety for their children.
Right.
That might be called up any day. What would they do? How would they do this if they wanted to rescind their registration?
Well, because the whole Selective Service system laws are really based on fraud. Just like most federal laws and state laws, they're all fraudulent because, you know, they're not positive law. They're just, in fact, most of them are just administrative law. And what we normally term color of law. It looks like law, but it isn't. And it has to be challenged.
I know that. I heard that.
Mm-hmm.
How would you, if somebody called you and said, Wayne, my son has registered for the draft,
mm-hmm.
and he wants to rescind it. Will you give us, please, as close as you can, instructions on how to do that?
Well, I think the first thing I would do is probably I would cite Public Law 94564 and let them know. It's in the congressional record, and nobody can deny it. That the people are the enemy of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Without their knowledge or consent, they've been declared enemies of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So why would enemies of the state fight for the state or lay their lives on the line for the state? It's a blatant conflict.
So would this be in some written form? In other words, they would write some type of a letter and say, I wasn't aware when I registered for the draft?
Yeah, I'd put it in the form of an affidavit.
An affidavit?
Yes.
And
because an affidavit is, you know, is like sworn testimony.
And an affidavit means that it would be notarized and there
mm-hmm.
would be witnesses and et cetera.
Right.
Now, maybe right off the bat, just sitting here tonight, that you wouldn't, you know exactly what they should do. The reason I'm being so specific, Wayne,
mm-hmm.
is because you remember when I had the situations arise, and that I called you and said, my goodness, can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
You wrote it for me and said, write this at the bottom of the letter and sign it this way and put this there and this there. I did exactly what you said. And, of course, I didn't hear from them for a long time. And then, of course, they came back and you gave me instructions again and haven't heard a word.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be back, but... and folks, just for your knowledge, it's a debt that doesn't exist, that a lawyer on behalf of a plaintiff is trying to collect from me. The debt was not a debt in the first place. It was fraudulent. Secondly, the statute of limitations has been up for a few years. And I received a letter from this lawyer with a revival in it, and telling me that I had to sign it. And I realized that what that meant was I am giving them permission to revive a debt, an alleged debt, that has passed the statute of limitations. And I knew I couldn't sign it. I wouldn't sign it. However, it was also in the letter that if I didn't get it signed within 30 days, that the sheriff would be serving me. And so this was what Wayne and I are discussing right now. It doesn't have to be a secret, but I'll tell you that what he suggested that I do, it so far has kept the wolf from the door. Wayne,
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if there is a way that you could come up with a draft form letter for people to use. We could...
I can prepare an affidavit.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, we could actually post that at our website.
Sure.
And if maybe people that... of course, anybody can go to the library.
I'll send it in document form so it can be printed out. People can use it all over the country, wherever they want. You know?
Okay, let me ask you this. If somebody wrote to you and sent you a self-addressed stamped envelope and a couple of bucks to cover your printing and your postage.
Oh, sure.
Would you be, and then they'll self-address and stamp the envelope,
mm-hmm.
and then you would be willing to mail it back to them.
Oh, sure. No problem.
That is wonderful.
No problem at all.
Thank you. God love you. Thank you. So, okay. That is for somebody who has registered for the draft and realizes that they have been fraudulently led into volunteering to register for the draft, yes?
Yes, and of course, what happens to create this whole scenario under the 14th Amendment is that the state, when you are born, sends a copy of your birth certificate to the United States Department of Commerce.
Yes.
Where you're registered with the Department of Commerce and held as collateral for the federal government and the Federal Reserve. So therein is another fraud, because that's all done without anybody's knowledge or consent. And it gives you an involuntary change in status from a free man to a ward of the state. And, of course, that's all actionable. I mean, you can refute that.
And it's held as collateral. I would like to expand on that for our listeners, because mm-hmm. if they're hearing this for the first time, it sounds so out in left field.
Yes, it does.
I found a newspaper. I didn't find it. Chuck found a newspaper article, small little article, that said that the International Monetary Fund was going to begin to, they're going to be careful, in other words, on lending to nations,
mm-hmm.
and that in return for loans to a nation, the nation is going to have to submit a profit and loss statement and a financial statement.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to Cindy Weatherly, who wrote an excellent article. I think she called it The Emperor's Clothes. It's on her website at sweetliberty.org in the children's section. And it's titled, Are Your Children Human Capital? When I was talking to Cindy about it and told her that when I saw this article, the first thing that came through my mind was probably that the people, the energy, if you would, the projected energy output of the citizens of all of the country were probably listed as assets on that financial statement. And she said, absolutely. Then she sent me her article, and I gasped in shock while I was reading it, because they literally, it isn't just the children either, it's all of us.
Mm-hmm.
We are human capital. And folks, you can go to the website at sweetliberty.org, go into the children's section, and how you find that on the website, if you scroll down just a little ways on the main page, you'll find a box that says, don't miss our issues sections. And there's a drop-down box, and then all the subjects that are that we have on the website are in those issues sections.
Mm-hmm.
Just click on the children,
mm-hmm.
and then hit go. And you'll be there, and you can find the article. You can also read the presidential executive order under Clinton, where he set up a commission to study capital, and included in that was human capital, folks. So that is to verify what Wayne was just saying. And Wayne, we're at the bottom of our hour, and so we're going to take a 60-second break. Folks, please get your pen in your hand. And remember that this broadcast only stays on the air because of you. And we are still way behind on our airplane bill. Through January, we're still at $7,000 in arrears. We need your help if we're going to stay on the air. We'll be right back.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
All right, we're back. Folks, I want to give you that address. Once again, just in case you missed it, it is Jackie Patru, P-A-T-R-U, P.O. Box 190, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. Do remember that we're broadcasting only Monday through Wednesday as of December, and you'll be able to, of course, hear us live on the Internet, or you can listen on shortwave from Worldwide Christian Radio, 5.070 megahertz. We're also on C-band satellite, and I'm sorry that I don't have that. I should have it up in front of me so that I can give you that. For those of you who have C-band satellite, you can tune in that way. And our guest this evening is Wayne Blanchard, a very kind, a very generous, and very giving person, because I happen to know that he's helped and given suggestions to many people when they've needed some help. Wayne, thank you.
You're welcome, everybody. I can also send you a copy of the Department of Commerce birth registration. I have one of those.
Uh-huh.
And I'll scan that and I'll email it to you.
Okay.
So you can see that it's for real.
Okay, you know, okay, that's great. And then we can post it right on our website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Department of Commerce.
They call it Department of Commerce Birth Registration.
Mm-hmm.
And at the with the aid of the state, you know, they have all your information, where you were born and all that, and it goes into the Department of Commerce files.
That's interesting, that particular department, isn't it, Wayne?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so maybe we're getting someplace tonight. At least it's a possibility. It's opening some windows of opportunity here to use.
This birth registration, too, also creates another thing that you may have heard of, and maybe you haven't, but it's called the law merchant. In other words, you with this registration with the Department of Commerce, you become a law merchant, which means that when you use Federal Reserve notes or when you file any forms with the government, you are considered an expert, and you're supposed to know everything there is need to know about whatever you're doing. And this is all implied.
Ignorance of the law is no excuse,
exactly.
Yes?
Exactly. And this is all implied. It's what they call implied consent legislation. In other words, if you don't rebut it or refuse it, they got you.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. It's the same world. I'll give you another example. If Internal Revenue sends you a statement, say they want $10,000, and under the Uniform Commercial Code, if you don't refuse and refute that presentment within 72 hours, it's considered a valid presentment. And this is how IRS steals property every day, because people don't know that unless they refute it, it's considered valid. And you're hooked. You're in. And that's how the system works. As a matter of fact...
No, but if they sent you a notice and said you owe $10,000, wouldn't that be a person who has filed the 1040 reporting form?
Oh, sure.
So it is the 1040 reporting form a contractual agreement that you enter into with them?
Well, it is. It's an annual renewable contract, yes.
It's renewable annually, so
right.
When you decide you don't want to renew it, you just don't?
Well, I got rid of my situation with Internal Revenue back in 1989, and I revoked and rescinded my signatures on every form ever submitted to Internal Revenue Service based on constructive fraud. And I've not heard from them in 15 years. And I do not file any Form 1040s or keep any records, nor will I.
And you still are making a living?
Yes, I am.
Are there websites that have these types of forms that you're talking about on?
No.
On them, there aren't.
No. But I have them. I have most of them, as a matter of fact, that I've created myself over the last 15 or 18 years or so. And, it worked for me, so I'm reasonably sure it worked for other people.
And how would one go about? See, I didn't ask you to come on to create a whole lot of work for you. But when you talk about these things and you have them, I sense at least many of our listeners saying, "I'd like to see a copy of that. I'd like to."
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
The revocation or rescission, actually, I revoked and rescinded my Social Security number and my signature on all forms, and it's about a 6.5-7-page document, and I have it in a document form, and I can email it to you.
Okay. Would it be like in Word or something, or?
Actually, I can send it, let's see. I think it all comes out as one long page.
Okay. You would email that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I could take it and format it in HTML format for the website.
Sure. I just took my name and, my Social Security number off, but I mean, just that personal information, but the rest of it is all right there.
Mm-hmm. You know, in our website, I told our listeners this last night, in the section that's on the main page titled, "So You Want to Go to War," my intention was to have a subsection there on the draft. And the thought that's going through my mind right now, Darren, our webmaster, archives all of our broadcasts, and what we should do is this information that you're going to be sending to us, we need to list it right in there. We need to post it, and also the link to these broadcasts, and maybe there will be more before the end of the hour that we see that there's more that you could offer by way of information that could be helpful. And then people who go into the website, into the archives, or into that section would be able to click right there, as well as being in the regular archives, but having a link there so that what they're seeing in that section on the draft, they would also be able to listen to the broadcast.
Sure.
For the explanation to go along with it.
Sounds good.
So, okay, boy, I'll tell you what, this gets, you know, I sent a letter off a long time ago, and it was a lovely, I shouldn't say a lovely letter, it was very well done. And it was basically from Save a Patriot, and I know that they turned out to be, you know, pretty not dependable, but they wrote this letter for me. It was a 7-page letter. That was when Rubin was the treasurer, the Secretary of the Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
And the main important part of it was that I applied for a Social Security number when I was 17, after I graduated, because I was told I had to have one. So I entered into a contract fraudulently, and I wasn't even of age to contract.
Yes.
However,
there's also a public law prohibiting the disclosure of your Social Security number.
Yeah.
$1,000 fine if anybody deprives you of any service because you will not disclose your Social Security number. It's a single-page form, and I also have that in a document. I can email that to you.
Well, okay, thank you. Folks, for those of you listening on the shortwave, don't have a computer, access to the Internet, I do know that the libraries, your libraries, have the computers available for the public.
Yeah, they do.
And so you can go to a public. The thing is, if we ask Wayne to get this together, like in a document form, in a packet form, I don't know how much work would be involved if it were, you know, came down to mailing the documents.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't want to put that burden on you because, you know, we had document packets on education, on regionalism, on the UN. There were about 4 or 5 document packets, and they were loaded. And my God, the work that went into those, we had to take them to have them copied, of course, but every time you got them collated, they collated wrong, and we would sit for hours putting these.
We can get involved.
Oh, my goodness, honey, the time involved was. And you don't want to overcharge and say, well, look at all the time we put into it. So it got to the point where I wasn't even advertising or offering the documents packets anymore because we just weren't able to spend the time putting them together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that probably the best thing is for our listeners who want this information, you get it to me and I'll get it over to our webmaster. They can go, if they don't have internet access, they can go to a library, go into the section so you want to go to war, into the draft, and these things will be there. Because it all ties together with a lot of stuff, doesn't it, Wayne?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
All right, so let's talk about somebody. Okay, we've pretty much we don't know how. Okay, let me get my thoughts in order here. When I sent the letter rescinding my Social Security number, there was never an acknowledgement of the letter. There was nothing.
There won't be.
And anything that I had my Social Security number on was there. And right now I draw Social Security, Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And if you rescind that number, if a person's paid into Social Security all their lives and because of, you know, all of the taxes, et cetera, haven't been able to, let's say, build a nest egg of their own.
Right.
If they rescind their Social Security number, I suppose that means they couldn't draw Social Security.
Not necessarily.
No?
No.
Oh.
No. No. As a matter of fact, I faced that myself a couple of years ago. And what I did, I happened, you know, talk about God being with you sometimes. I happened to have
God is always with us.
I happened to have an interview with a man from my home state, and I explained to him a few things about what I was doing.
Now, this was from the Social Security Administration?
Exactly. Exactly. When I went in for the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed him a couple of my documents. And he says, oh, yes. He says, I understand what you're doing, Wayne. He said, no problem. So he allowed me to sign the application and make my proper reservations on it and all that. And I, you know, it went through without a hitch.
I see. In other words, you do it with the proper reservations.
Exactly.
Oh, and I didn't.
Right.
Because I really never thought my Social Security number was rescinded anyway. Because
mm-hmm.
I never heard from them.
Well, of course, see, whenever you're making allegations against any government or government agency on fraudulent activities, they do not respond because
yeah.
it would be an implied admission of fraud.
Of course it would.
So they're not going to respond. I mean, you know, that's the way it is. It's everything they do is unilateral.
I told you today that to make my point about these U.S. titles, the codes,
mm-hmm.
Like titles 50, and I'm not sure, but it's for some reason 34 is in my mind for the U.S. Department of Labor. But whatever it is, it wasn't positive law. It didn't apply to the several states. And I shared that information with our listeners last night to make the point that when I knew what I was doing, when I absolutely was clear that they didn't have jurisdiction, and I simply kept asking, please show me.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, after the third letter, that was in 93, I had my business until in 95 I sold it. And I had never heard from them and never heard from them again.
Great.
After telling me I owed $9,800 plus $3,000 of a fine for my infraction.
Right.
And I had 30 days to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had people that worked for me come into my office. A few of them, several of them, who were very concerned because some of them had worked for businesses that the Department of Labor had audited, and because they couldn't pay the fines, their businesses wound up closing. And these people, three of them that I recall, were concerned, is it going to be all right? Are we going to be okay? Will you be able to keep the business? And I said, don't worry about it, we're okay. But that's what they do to people. And yet I never heard from them again. They never responded to that final letter. And like I said, they didn't say, oh, yeah, you're right. They just left me alone.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Like this collection matter. I don't hear anything back. And I get it in within 72 hours, the way you have said that that's important.
Right. Yes, it is. Very important. See, in 1966... the Federal Tax Lien Act placed the entire taxing and monetary system under the Uniform Commercial Code. So the proper venue for taxing and monetary issues is the Uniform Commercial Code, not tax court.
Mm-hmm.
Because you go to tax court, usually you lose. Very, very few people win.
Yeah.
And the reason they cannot win is because they've defaulted by not refusing you know, any presentment that's come in their direction. And it becomes a valid presentment. Hey, gotcha. That's how the evil
valid under colorable law.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's what happened to me with the IRS after I had sold my business.
Mm-hmm.
And it was several months later. They sent to me at my home, and I had sold the business, but it said, you know, Jacqueline Patru and Silhouette American Spas, Inc., or whatever.
Right.
And they asked me to apply for an EIN number, Wayne. And when I looked at that, I said, I don't need an EIN. That's an employer's identification number.
Right.
And instead of writing back and saying, I do not have need, I have no employees, what I did is throw it in the wastebasket.
Mm-hmm.
And about 3 months later, I received a letter from the IRS, and they said, thank you very much for your application. Here is your new EIN number. And that's what they used to put the notices of lien against my home in Illinois.
Exactly.
And they held that, for over 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And after it was quite deteriorated, they lifted the, well, actually it was a revenue officer that got a hold of it. And he said, they can't do this. This is, they had violated, of course, their own IRS code and state law and federal law.
Mm-hmm.
And after telling me that I owed nearly $500,000 in taxes, which was totally made up, after 7 years, they wound up, they had me for the business and they had me for 3 personal years.
Mm-hmm.
For a total, I think it started out at like, I don't know, $380,000, but we wound up paying $23 for 1 year and $27 for another.
Yes.
And there were, and actually what we were told to do by this revenue officer is to go ahead and file zero reporting forms. And, one for the 1 year for the biggest one, and we did that for the other years. And they reworked it because they were the ones, I never filed 1040s, they were the ones that used that EIN number that I didn't apply for to put the notices of lien against the home. It was a mortgage-free home, and I had had a contract for sale on it, Wayne. And it said it's just now being sold.
Oh, my.
For 60% less, of course, than I had a contract for sale on it at the time. And now it's deteriorated to the point that I had to let it go for very little. But what am I trying to say here? I have been so blessed. What they did was terrible and unconscionable, and yet I don't dwell on it because I have been so blessed in so many ways that is just a little stumbling stone, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. I agree.
So what about, all right, let's say that somebody gets called up for the draft. They haven't rescinded their draft registration, and they get called up for the draft. The only thing that I could offer our listeners last night is speculation. It has been said that if you, first of all, you have to ask them, if I take this oath, am I giving up my rights, my God-given rights, protected by, you know, the Constitution? And of course, they do.
Yes.
They become property of the government
yes.
issue. And so therefore, it has been said that if they decline to take the oath, they won't step forward, that they cannot be inducted.
Well, you know, oath is an interesting subject in itself. You know, we are, according to the word, we are not to forswear ourselves.
Yes.
And so there's a fairly neat little trick that you can use if you're ever asked for an oath.
Okay.
Just simply tell whoever is asking for the oath that you are a pathological liar. And if you take an oath, then you'll be committing perjury.
What if they say, we don't care, go ahead and do it anyway?
Well, if you tell them you're a pathological liar, how can they force the issue?
I don't know. Do you know anybody who's tried that and it's worked?
Yes, I do. Not recently, but back a few years ago, yes. So that's a possibility that people can consider. It sort of puts them on the spot, you know.
Because I don't know, what would happen if a person, let's say they say that I am not going to take this oath because I refuse to relinquish my God-given rights.
Well, not only that, it's also a Fifth Amendment violation, too, if you're forced to take an oath. That's incriminating yourself.
Okay, under the Constitution.
Right.
And so, therefore, I have wondered beyond that, okay, the person won't step forward. They won't take the oath.
Right.
And then what happens? I do not know. And I thought, well, what if they had to go to jail for 90 days or something?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a heck of a lot better than giving yourself over to the U.S. government, Inc., becoming a part of a mercenary army, killing and dying for their new world order.
Yes, definitely. I agree 100%. Yes. And if they impose a fine on you, you just file a statement of indigency so that, that you don't have any money. I mean, it's like getting blood out of a stone. They can't do it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, for those, you said that you would make up the affidavit.
Yes.
And they could... So somebody could send you a self-addressed stamped envelope with a couple of bucks? Would that do it?
Oh, sure.
And then you would just stick it in the mail for them, and then they could copy it.
Right.
And they could also share it with any of their friends. Could we give our listeners your address, Wayne?
P.O. Box 452. New Hope. Virginia.
Is New Hope two words?
Yes, it is.
New Hope, Virginia.
24469.
244. All right. I've mentioned this to our listeners before, and I want to do it again. When we're addressing an envelope, folks, I address my envelopes this way all the time, and before the P.O. box, put in care of, and spell out Virginia fully.
Mm-hmm.
And put brackets around the postal code.
Right.
And this will go to Wayne Blanchard. But you know what? We're out of time, Wayne.
Oh, okay.
And I'll give the address again tomorrow night. And if you have more information that you would like to share with our listeners,
mm-hmm.
I would like for you to let me know, and we'll do tomorrow night.
Okay. I'll get this affidavit done tomorrow and email it to you so you won't have it in front of you.
Thank you.
I also sent you a copy of the Public Law 94-562.
Great.
So that's in your email.
Okay, great. We're out of time here.
Okay.
We've only got about 30 seconds left. Folks, Wayne might be back with us tomorrow night. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, Wayne.
Okay, good night, everybody.
For your help. Thank you.
Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, be back tomorrow night. We'll be back. Until then, God bless you, and good night.